This episode is brought to you by Heidy. Imagine kicking back while a HIPAA-compliant AI scribe writes your soap notes for free. Yes, you heard us right. Heidy is free. I'm Dr. Tom, Heidi's CEO and founder, and we started Heidy to stop clinicians wasting their life on clinical documentation. Heidy transforms your consult babble into crisp, clear soap notes, personalizing itself with every edit. One day, Heidy will be your AI resident, looking through research, explaining plans, and doing anything you don't want to. If you currently pay for an AI scribe in your practice, you should swap to Heidy. We'll even credit you for anything you've already paid. Dive into the description for the link and make your practice the envy of every stethoscope in town. Sign up and watch Heidy work its magic, all for free, because you've got better things to do.
Hey, this is Brad Block, host of The Physician's Guide to Doctoring. This is a personal and professional development podcast for physicians where we have experts on the show that try to teach us everything we should have been learning while we were memorizing Krebs cycle.
I'm your host, Dr. Christine Goins, and today we have a distinguished guest with us. Saida Alkazak brings over 28 years of legal expertise to our discussion today. Fluent in both Spanish and English, you know, she specializes in immigration matters and is an integral part of the esteemed Rizzo and Associates PLLC. Saida brings a wealth of experience, having served as a foreign attorney and associate in immigration law firms in Dallas and New Jersey. Her expertise extends to international law, including managing cases in Mexico, covering areas like international, environmental, oil, gas, and corporate matters. Saida holds a Master's of Law from Southern Methodist University and a Juris Doctorate from La Salle University School of Law in Mexico. She's also an active member of the bar. Today, we are so privileged to have Saida as our guest to share her wealth of knowledge and insights, especially concerning immigration matters. So welcome, Saida.
Thank you. Thank you, Christine. Thank you for having me.
So could you share first just your journey of becoming an immigration attorney and why you chose this field?
Sure. So, you know, as any doctor, pretty much, right? You go as a general practitioner, right? GP. And when you start working, you have this drive or little things that you know you like, but you don't know how to, you know, still handle any cases. I mean, it's too soon when you finish the career or your postgrad to pick, you know, an area. But little by little, you know, I started working on corporate matters for big corporations, humongous corporations, all international law in Europe, in the States, in Mexico, Brazil, and whatnot, Latin American countries. And then little by little, I thought, you know, this is not as personal as I thought it would be, right? Very related to the medicine. So I really wanted to see my clients. I really wanted to talk to them, to help them. And that's when everything started. So when I decided to move to Dallas and go for my master's, I met an amazing attorney. And she graduated from Georgetown University. And at that point, she said, you know, the first time she said, you are bilingual, you're Mexican. I mean, come on, do something for the immigration community. And to me, that was like, oh, my aha moment. Finally, you know, I can really help the people I like, the community I want to, I guess, bring together. You know, the language barrier, it's a huge problem for most of people that move around the world. You know, you move to Mexico and then very few people are fluent in the language, and that becomes an issue in general, not only for a legal matter, but in general. And that's when everything started. That's when everything clicked. And finally, I said, well, after all these years of being, you know, this, what we call fancy lawyer, right? I mean, not seeing your clients, being all paperwork and stuff like that, I finally decided, I think I'm going to, you know, give it a shot and see if that's something that I like. Definitely harder than I expected, because of course you have to meet with the client on a daily basis and you have to deal with all their emotions, all their, you know, worries, everything. It's not only about the legal matter, right? So, but also on the other hand, you become almost like a family member, right? So they trust you, they are going to follow your advice. And that to me is precious. That to me has been the best gift ever. So immigration is this area of law that involves a lot of things. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about that. And hopefully we'll have time to talk about tax issues, for example, financial issues, buying property in other countries, all those things, right? I mean, you want to integrate. You want to become part of the community where you are moving in. So even opening a bank account, right? I mean, things as simple as that become a huge issue for immigrants in general. So I had to have this holistic approach of law. You guys, of course, have this term all the time, right? You use it in medicine all the time, but I use it in law all the time as well, because for me, you know, I need psychologists, I need doctors, I need, in general, coaches or therapy, you know, therapists, a little bit of everything, different areas of expertise to be able to really help my client, because their needs are endless. They have family that comes and goes, and sometimes it's hard for them because they don't want to let them go back to their home countries, of course. Right? It's your ego talking and you want to be happy. So you want your family members near you. But sometimes they don't have a visa. They don't have a visa to stay. They don't have a visa to work. They have their own lives. And that's when everything, you know, starts to get complicated. And I just love it. You know, now that I have this, I guess, group of people that can help me, I can help them establish whatever, you know, country you pick, whatever language you pick, but establish in a country that you like, in the situation that you like, then everything is so much easier for people, right? The worries disappear. And little by little, you start getting the hang of a new system, because that's another thing, right? Seems like all the legal systems have the same, I guess, goal, but at the same time, no, they don't have the same process. Right? They don't follow the same process to achieve that goal. So that's also a problem, right? Things that, for example, in Mexico won't be a huge issue. In other countries, it's a big deal, right? It becomes a nightmare. So that's also a problem. That's also a problem when you move to another country. And, you know, you go from there and buying a car, getting a license plate, I mean, everything. So it's been a journey, as you said. A beautiful journey, and I'm very grateful. I'm still learning law, believe me, every single day, just like medicine, right? I mean, every case is different.
It's so interesting just listening to you explain, you know, your journey into immigration law. Reminds me so much of medicine, as you were pointing out, and this alignment of wanting to be closer to your client and wanting to collaborate even with other, you know, interdisciplinarily to allow them to achieve their desired outcome. Like, you need a team, you need others to help you do that. And how many areas of their lives are involved in this one process, but it hits everything. It hits family, it hits the home, it hits culture. And so I really did want to dive in as you were mentioning some of these big areas like property. You know, I'm thinking about buying property in Mexico. And just so everyone knows, not only is she an amazing immigration attorney, she's also my yoga teacher in Mexico. And so, but in this process of learning about how to go about land ownership, like what are some of the regulations or restrictions, let's say for a U.S. citizen to begin a process like that to legally own land in Mexico?
So the first thing that you have to consider is that you're going to have to decide if you become a permanent resident or a temporary resident in Mexico before you buy land, right? Almost all countries in the world allow you to buy land under a tourist visa, right? But then the protection is very limited, right? You don't have full rights, let's say. Let's call it that way. Although, you know, under every single constitution, you're going to have rights of property ownership. If you don't have the appropriate permit to be living in Mexico, to be working in Mexico, then the Mexican government is going to be, you know, hesitant to give you full rights because they want you, of course, like any country, pay taxes, right? That's bottom line, pretty much, right? And you guys have, I would say, you know, something that's very important to consider. You're going to be taxed, as you know, as a U.S. citizen, what we call it worldwide income. Right? So whatever you make money, you're going to be taxed. It doesn't matter where you live technically. So it's a huge, I guess, burden on citizens because you're going to be filing taxes in both countries. You have to know the system. And most of us have a hard time finding a good accountant, filing our own taxes. So for example, a lot of people, when they come to Mexico, they want to buy property, but they want to build, you know, condos or two apartments, and then I leave and the main floor or whatnot. And then that's another issue because then you are receiving rental income, right? Again, it's, you know, property taxes, income taxes, all these issues. And as I always say to my clients, you know, try to find a good accountant because you're going to need it. You're going to need more than a tax attorney, more than a real estate lawyer, because that's also very important for you guys to know and be aware. In Mexico, we have what we call notarios, right? A notario is not the same figure as a notary in the States. So a notary in the States, the only thing they do is just to double check that is your ID, your signature, your address, and that's it, right? In Mexico, a notario, it's a lawyer. It's a lawyer that has a lot of expertise, and it's pretty much the only one that can handle any real estate transaction. So they will be able to do any survey for you, check on the title, and it's kind of like putting together a title company and a notary and, you know, a real estate attorney at the same time. So it's very good. It's very good. And they charge you a percentage depending on the cost of the property. So it's a little bit easier to know in advance the fees that they're going to be charging. But it's also very good because it's kind of like a one-stop shop, right? And for somebody that, you know, it's not fluent in the language or it's not familiar with the system, it's almost easier to do it that way.
Yeah, for sure. And it sounds actually quite efficient and convenient to have all of those things really in one person with the expertise. So as you were mentioning, there are these protections that are offered if you are actually, I guess if you hold like a residency then in Mexico, it would be beneficial to do that if you're trying to own property. So are there different types of residency options that would be available for a U.S. citizen in Mexico?
Yes, there are two mainly, and temporary. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, it's very different also if you buy within ocean distance or if you buy, you know, in the middle of the country, because the requirements are very different. Foreigners are not allowed to buy property within ocean distance. I think it's like 100 kilometers, something like that. So you are going to have to go through a trust, right? If you don't become a permanent resident, and then later on you do the citizenship process, right? So remember, it usually goes this way. So you become a temporary resident, then permanent resident, then you file for citizenship. Once you're a Mexican citizen, then you can own property near the ocean. But if you are not a citizen, then for sure you have to go through a trust. And the trusts are usually handled by banks in Mexico. So again, I mean, yeah, pretty reliable institutions. And at least, I mean, these are big banks, right? International banks. And it is not as confusing as in the States. We don't have like these union banks and these small, you know, banks that you find in some states that to me was very confusing, right? Because it's not similar. But these are banks that are in Europe and most of them are already in the States as well. So it's very easy because you can be buying property and be living in the States and sending all the documents to the office in the States. So it's convenient, right? It's easier. They make your life easier. But remember, if you're not a Mexican citizen and you still are a U.S. citizen, you're going to have to go through a trust, even if you have your permanent or temporary.
Okay. So if you are, let's say you are not yet a citizen, because I'm assuming that takes time. Like, what are actually the requirements? Like, what does that look like in terms of the step-by-step process of obtaining your residency?
Okay. So you are going to start by going to the Mexican consulate in the nearest Mexican consulate that you can find, depending on the state that you live, right? As some of us know, if you live in a big state, in an important state, Mexico, the Mexican government is going to have representation there. But if you don't live in, you know, in an important state, you're going to have to go to either Washington, D.C. or, you know, San Diego or L.A. where, you know, there's concentration of Mexicans, where there's a need of a Mexican consulate. There, they are going to ask you for financial proof of solvency, where we call it, you know, solvency, which is the most important part in Mexico. You either are going to have to prove that you have money in the bank or you are making money or you have property or the three of them, because some people, they make money, but not enough money. They have money in the bank, but they don't have enough money in the bank. And they do have a property, but it's either hard to sell and convert that into cash value, what we call cash value, or you have it under a mortgage, so it doesn't count, you know?
And that's probably a lot of Americans that have
all of them,
their house under mortgage. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why I'm mentioning that, because a lot of people say, you know, I have a house. And I'm always, you know, Mexico is very different because we usually, when we say we have a house, it's because it's paid, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Very different in the U.S.
Very different. So I always tell them, but how much do you owe in the house, right? Where are your mortgage payments? And then when you start talking about that, then you realize that they still owe a lot of money.
Okay. So it's really looking at those three different aspects of providing that financial proof. Okay. So you go to the Mexican consulate. And so I'm assuming that would be in the U.S. If I, you know, am in Mexico, I would be going to like somewhere in Nayarit.
Correct. To a local office. Or remember, in the location that we are, we have two offices. We have one in Nayarit and then we have one in Puerto Vallarta, right? So depending on where you live, it's going to be the location that you go. But most of the time, if you didn't enter with already a temporary permit, then you're going to have to go through the Mexican consulate in your home country. Right? So they won't allow you to switch from a tourist visa to a temporary visa within Mexico. They want you to go back, do the process there, the first interview, then you come with a permit, have another interview, and then process your documents within the local office. And then let's say this is the second step on the process, right? The first step is the interview outside Mexico, then the second within Mexico. Then is when you finally request your temporary visa or your temporary residency visa. And if they approve it, they will approve it in 1 or 2 days, which is great. I think the only inconvenience right now, process-wise, is that there are a lot of foreigners applying, a lot, unbelievable. And, well, there's a huge backlog, so sometimes you have to go 2 or 3 times, meaning 2 or 3 days in a row, only to get an appointment, right? Because to obtain an appointment is not easy anymore. It used to be very easy. And they don't have systems like, you know, you can go online and set up an appointment and then go in person. No, you have to go in person. And sometimes, I mean, it can take, you know, hours waiting online for you to get that. So the other important thing is once you go to the consulate outside Mexico, to the Mexican consulate in the U.S., and they approve your temporary permit, you have only 1 month to come to the country, to come to Mexico, and follow the process. If you don't do it within 1 month, it's all canceled, and you have to go back and redo everything.
And this happens after your interview, or this is the interview that's in Mexico?
No, this happens after the interview in the U.S. So you get your temporary permit approved, then you fly to Mexico and then go for your second interview, but it has to be within a month. You cannot do it after a month. A lot of people, you know, they don't follow through with the process for whatever reason. Maybe they got sick. Maybe, you know, people get sick and has a hard time, but they don't follow through and they have to redo the whole thing again. And just like any immigration authority in the world, they don't like that. Right? Because it's like, it's weird. I mean, how come you didn't do it? You know, if you were excited about moving to Mexico or whatever. So they don't like it. And they will ask you for more documents. That's for sure.
All right. So that means get it done the first time. And so how long does that initial process take in the States? Is that just the 1 or 2 day period that you were mentioning? Like once you actually get the interview and submit the document, then it takes about a day or two. And then you get that time period of a month where you need to come to Mexico.
Correct. It's like a day or two. But I think the hardest part right now is just getting appointments, right, to the local office or to the Mexican consulate in the U.S. Canada, it's a little bit better. They do have a system online. It's super. You can, you know, log in, request appointment, and you see the availability, but the U.S. doesn't have it. So you have to go in person and request appointment. And sometimes that takes a month or 2 months to get the appointment. Once you get the appointment, it's easy, 1 or 2 days to get the permit.
Okay. So it's getting that initial appointment. Okay. So then once you come to Mexico and you, in that 1 month period, then what happens?
Then you file. Remember, I'm trying to call it a permit the first time. So you will differentiate between the, I guess, the stamp that they put on your passport at the Mexican consulate. And then when you are here in a local office, they will actually give you a card, right? They will give you, like what we call in the States, a green card. They will give you a card that will issue a document. And that will be your permit, your temporary. It's temporary, though. You're going to have to file for renewal or, I mean, depending on what you want to do, right? You can also request a work permit, remember, because if you're going to work while you're in Mexico, always request a work permit.
Okay. And you can do that once you're a temporary, once you have the temporary visa.
But always be honest, because if, you know, if you lie to an immigration authority about, you know, I'm not working, and when you're young, nobody's going to believe you that you're not working. And with all these nomad and home office and, you know, all these things, they don't believe people that are young, that they come to the country and don't work to support themselves. So you may have a little bit more of the requirements to prove like you work for such and such company, how much money you're making, W-2s, you know, tax returns, whatever. But it's better to present those than being denied for documents, you know?
Because they know that you're getting money somehow to sustain yourself.
Remember, before the pandemic, it used to be more for people that retired in Mexico, right? Not anymore. Now young people want to come to Mexico and work from Mexico, right? But most people have their jobs back home. So it's going to be tricky if you don't present the financial proof again.
Are you looking to diversify your investment portfolio and maximize your returns? By learning short-term investing skills, you can yield higher returns at compressed speeds by creating income on a daily and weekly basis. Today's sponsor, Lightspeed Investing, has amassed over a decade's worth of success and experience in this field to teach you how to leverage the futures and commodity financial markets. Inspired by the billionaire natural gas trader John Arnold, Lightspeed Investing has built a proprietary training and educational platform. For more information, connect with President and CEO Philip J. Hawk Chan on LinkedIn, where you can start your journey towards financial freedom and abundance at lightspeed rates, like many medical professionals already have.
So then once you become a temporary, well, once you have your temporary visa, how long does it take to get your permanent visa, or what is that process?
Well, usually 4 years. 4 years, it will give you the permit for 4 years. And that's also, it's also good to know that you can bring a car, for example, with foreign plates. Of course, you know, Canada, the US and Mexico have this treaty, used to be called NAFTA, but I think we all call it NAFTA still, but it's called TEMEC, which allows you for a lot of things. People, of course, if you haven't moved around these three countries, it's hard to know, but they will allow you to bring your car with US plates for 4 years without being penalized or anything. You don't need to import the car either, so you don't have to pay. So there are a lot of benefits in that. It can be a new car, you know, you still pay whatever, because that's another thing. You guys always pay a monthly fee. Again, it's different in Mexico. We buy the cars, you know, we don't like to make payments on cars. But in the US, it's like that. So if you have your car, you can bring it with your temporary for 4 years without any problems, any input documents or anything.
Are there any other benefits, I guess, to having the temporary visa? I mean, it sounds like on the road to owning more property or land, it would be beneficial for tax purposes.
Correct. Correct. For sure. Tax purposes. Mainly those two, right? I mean, people are trying, and I see this around the world. This is not only, you know, the US and Mexico. We have, I guess, a bigger relationship with other countries, and it's easier, of course, but I see it everywhere. Like, people are trying to find passports that can give you more benefits, more options, more tax benefits, right? More health benefits, for example. That's another thing. Of course, if you become a citizen, the Mexican government will protect you. And you may be aware of this, which is going back to medicine, but we have socialized medicine in Mexico. So it is amazing. Right? Amazing. I was just talking to a friend yesterday, and he was telling me that his son was living in New York at the time, and he was studying there and all that. Like, he had a problem. He had to go to the hospital, and it was very expensive. We all know that, right? If you don't have private insurance, forget it. So he said, well, come back to Mexico, right? You're Mexican, come back to Mexico. So he came back to Mexico, and he was able to go to the hospital here. And he said, you know, all the things that I heard, that the Mexican hospitals, the medicine here, that the doctors are horrible, none of that. I mean, they were amazing. There were, I guess I want to call it like more personal than in the States, right? Because they don't have to, I guess, see as many patients as in the States, and they truly take care of the patient. So he loved it. He was so happy, you know, like his son was here and not in the States. So that's another really good thing. And of course, when you become a citizen, everything helps because they are going to give you what we call, Canada has it and some countries in Europe as well. It's a pension just because you are getting older, right? And for Mexico, it's, I forgot how they call it in Canada, but it's kind of like a second pension to keep the inflation at the same rate as your original pension, right? Because we know that your original pension, it's going to be going, you know, down in value pretty much. And this pension, the second pension, kicks in to pretty much help you with inflation. So it's really good. And of course, you get discounts on everything, right? Everything like theaters and movies and all the stuff.
Well, it's interesting too that you mentioned the healthcare aspect, because I've received healthcare in Mexico before. And I mean, the doctors really are, they really are amazing. They would use technology that I've actually never seen them use, you know, in the States for procedures. And, you know, I've had an important procedure done in Mexico and everything is amazing. Everything really was amazing. And I didn't have insurance. I mean, I have international health insurance. So I initially paid out of pocket and was reimbursed, but it was really a beautiful experience. So thanks for sharing that. And that being another one of the benefits. And so if I was purchasing property now, of course, if I wouldn't be a citizen at the time that I obtained the property, because it sounds like it takes some time. So you're going from temporary visa to permanent visa, that's about 4 years, and then have to go from there to citizenship. So if you're buying property under, let's say a temporary visa, how does that impact things versus waiting until you have citizenship? Or does the tax structure kind of like change for you at that point? Or what is your advisement around that?
Well, the only thing that changes is the fact that you're going to have a trust and pay a fee every year for that trust, versus being a citizen, you don't have to have a trust and pay that fee. So it's going to be under your name once you become a citizen. Before, it's going to be under the bank's name, under the trust name. So it's just a fee. But also remember, in the corporate world, a lot of people like to have trusts, just because when you're transferring property between family members, you don't pay taxes, right? So depending on the value of the property, you may consider having a trust anyways, right? So it is a legal figure that not a lot of people explore, because it's not as common. It is common in the area where we're at, but it is not common when you, for example, live in San Miguel de Allende, right? I mean, a lot of people live in San Miguel or move to San Miguel de Allende. They don't have to do that because they're not near the ocean. So it's not a big problem. But on the corporate world, it's also good. So you don't have to change names, transfer money, pay taxes, and that helps. Every little bit, you know, helps.
Yeah. So there are some benefits to having the trust and kind of keeping it in that particular structure, particularly when you're thinking about legacy or kind of leaving it to someone.
Exactly.
And how does so we talked about going from temporary to permanent. So that's 4 years. And then going to citizenship,
the final aspect.
How long does that take?
Well, it doesn't take long. It takes about 2 years. I think the main problem is it goes, you know, I always laugh because I've heard that in the States, people always say, well, you know, people should be fluent in the English language. Well, yeah, that's true, right? It helps to assimilate, it helps to integrate, it helps to understand the government. But when people come to Mexico and they have a hard time learning the language, then they understand the hardship that it becomes. So the test is going to be in Spanish, and you are going to have to be fluent in the language and have a conversation, plus the test, plus write some, you know, sentences or paragraph, whatever the immigration officer. It's exactly the same in the States. You know, we go back to confidence and so many aspects that people, when you move to another country, you lack that. So I find it easy when I work with a client and they really work on their confidence, because they can pass the test and they can speak the language and all that. But there are some clients that they can't, you know, they just can't. I mean, they try. I've seen them in Mexico. I've seen them in the US, right? I mean, it's horrible because they understand the language, but they cannot speak. They don't have enough vocabulary. And well, if you don't have enough vocabulary, you're not going to be able to pass. And it's frustrating, right? But that's it. I mean, it's just like any other citizenship test. They want you to be fluent in the country's language that you're applying.
Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. To be fluent in Spanish when you decided to become a Mexican citizen. So that means continuing all of my language classes and tutoring is all well worth it. So it's necessary for the process anyway. So that's really beautiful. Okay. That's really great to know. So in coming back for a minute to that tax question, do you know the difference in the percentage, I guess, of taxes that there would be for having the trust versus being a citizen and having it under your name?
No, fortunately, I don't have a number. As far as I remember, it goes against the value of your property. So depending on how much, you know, you value the property, is how much you're going to pay for the trust. So it depends. It varies, right? I mean, it's not the same as having a condo or having a house, a big house. And it is very easy for people to, when they come to Mexico, I don't know why, but Californians in general, right? But people from the coasts, right? If you sell your house in the state and then you bring the money to Mexico, you get very excited because you can have a huge property, right? But remember, having a huge property means paying big property taxes and trust fees and all that. So, of course, not as bad as in California or in New York City or, you know, Washington, D.C. But to me, if you're moving to another country to be happier, to have more freedom, that means you are trying to get rid of, you know, these issues, right? Pay high taxes for a property that it's not valued in the amount that you think it is valued. So you guys have to be careful. You guys have to be careful in that. That for sure, you know, it's something that you have to think about before buying or building. Because we all go crazy. We think, you know, it's amazing. I can have, you know, for a condo in the States, I can have a huge house here. Well, yeah, but it's going to cost. In the long run, it's going to cost you.
Yeah. So being mindful of what your financial obligations are going to be when you decide to make that switch. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense to think about all of those aspects. We were talking about closing costs and all these things. I was like, okay, all of these costs that I wasn't calculating when I was thinking about house designs and other things. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And what is that? How does the residency apply to your family members?
Well, so if you are married and pretty much one of you makes enough income or has enough property, then your spouse can come with you the same as your kids, right? So it's easier. It's so much easier. Now, sometimes that's a problem because if you're single and you make a lot of money, then for sure they're going to prove your case. But if there's only one person within the household that makes money and you're talking about five family members, right? Three kids and the husband and then you, then immigration is going to raise the bar and say, well, you need to make this more, right? This much more. And sometimes people don't make it. So it just depends on how many family members you want to bring with you.
For sure. No, that makes sense. I can understand that. Are there any initiatives or programs that support the cultural integration of, you know, let's say just for example, U.S. citizens becoming residents in Mexico to kind of help with the transition?
There are, you know, I was thinking about that this morning, and there are some, but unfortunately, they're not going to be in small communities, right? They're going to be in big cities like Mexico City, Guadalajara, Monterrey, for sure, right? Spanish classes, the same as in the States, right? Like Spanish classes and then learn about the culture in Mexico, learn about the art in Mexico, all these things. But in a small, I guess, towns or small regions like in Nayarit, it's very different because the government, they do not give enough resources to nonprofits to do that because that's usually nonprofits that, you know, are willing to work with the government, like help citizens to integrate. In these towns, I don't see it as often as I see it. I am from Mexico City, so I can speak, you know, that in Mexico City, you have a lot. I mean, just like in the States, you go to a university and they have tons of classes and, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing because you interact with students that, you know, regular students that are going through college or postgrad or whatever, and that helps a lot. But in these small towns, I don't see it. I it's hard to get these programs. Of course, like anybody and any, you know, nonprofits, we try to do it. We try to help with that because we see a lack of, I don't want to call it interest because I think that the government have a lot of interest in people, you know, knowing and the country rules and the culture and all that. But if you don't have the infrastructure, then it's harder. So here the citizens are the ones that have to start promoting those initiatives.
No, that's really understandable. And so given your, you know, experience and expertise in this process, what would you say are your best recommendations for people who are trying to immigrate to Mexico? You know, if those programs are not there, what could people do who are immigrating? What types of activities, what would you advise them to do to learn more about the culture and to make sure that they are integrating into the...
Right. Well, I think you mentioned it before. First of all, please try to learn the language, right? That's very important. If you cannot communicate while you are here in Mexico, then your life is going to be miserable because you're going to get frustrated and people are not going to have the time to sit with you and guide you through. And, you know, so it isn't your benefit to learn the language. Now, we are very fortunate that Mexico and the U.S. have this very tight relationship in every single sense. And there are many, there are even Mexican universities with programs in the States as these Mexican universities, sharing the culture and sharing, you know, the integration and these initiatives. So go through any of those programs, at least to know and familiarize yourself with not only the culture, but the way we see things, right? Which is very different. Every single country has their own way to do things, their own government system. So they will teach you there. And if you can take advantage of that, then when you come to Mexico, it's going to be so much easier because you're going to understand why we like to eat salsas, right? Why we like to eat tacos all the time, right? I mean, small things, but that will connect you with the local people. And then you're going to feel part of the town. You're going to feel part of the community. And then everything is going to be so much easier. You're going to like it. You're going to enjoy your days here. And of course, you know, at some point, even move permanently to Mexico, right?
Yes, that's the plan. Well, move, be part of the community, and then be able to go out and enter and share and explore and come back and have the community here, you know, as the home base. That's my goal. So thank you so much just for sharing. I mean, just so many valuable insights and your expertise. And before we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts, advice for our physician listeners who aspire to, you know, explore the world and even possibly emigrate to Mexico?
Well, I think you mentioned it also. And this is a word that even as a yoga practitioners, right, we take it, I guess, lightly, but be mindful. Be truly mindful. What do you want? Try to find, if you really like to learn other languages, other cultures, then this is the place, right? Because you're going to interact. I don't know, maybe some people are listening to this are not familiar with some areas in Mexico, but we have a lot of Europeans here, a lot from every single country in the world. And it is amazing. It is like a melting pot. Like, you know, I've heard that phrase in New York City so many times. And here is exactly the same thing. It's just in a different way, right? But the same attitude, the same hunger of learning from others. So if you're mindful and you pay attention to what would you like to buy, where would you like to be, and how, in general, you picture your life in the future, then I think you're going to be set. No surprises. You know, you manage the risk of everything, being risk management, the most important part of everything, right? Financial risk, health risk, because of course, if we go through situations that we don't like, we're going to get sick, right? So try to be mindful, try to really pay attention and just be careful, you know, try to find professionals. Doesn't mean that because we went to school, we know it all. But we went to school for a reason. And some of us, we really like to help people. So just try to find someone that you trust and go from there. And moving to different countries is an amazing experience. It is an amazing experience. You learn a lot from people and you learn a lot, you know, from yourself. Adaptation. I mean, you adapt to so many things. You're resilient. It is amazing. It is amazing. So do it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Sarda. I am really grateful that I met you and I've already learned a lot from you. And I'm really excited to be part of the community there, you know, bit by bit. It sounds like it's going to take me some time. but it's all part of it. It's part of that amazing journey. So I thank you so much for coming and sharing your expertise. For those who want to learn more about you, where could our listeners find you?
Okay, so we're based in Dallas, Texas, and my satellite office, it's in La Cruz, Nayarit, which is really close to Puerto Vallarta because people are more familiar with that name, Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. And our phone number is 972-363-7026. So if anybody, you know, wants to check our website, risolaw.com, I mean, there you can send us an inquiry and we will reply to you and then go case by case, right?
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. Thanks so much for sharing your wisdom. And we'll see you next time, everyone. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Thanks again from Heidi. Elevate your practice with a free AI scribe, zero cost, HIPAA compliant, and time saving. Ready to swap? We've got you covered for past AI scribe expenses. Head to HeidiHealth.com, get started, and make your practice the envy of every stethoscope in town.
Thanks for listening. I have a favor to ask. You listened to the episode until the end, which means you either fell asleep or you really liked the episode. So please share it or like it or comment on a social media post or write us a 5-star review, something. It would really help me out. And maybe what you learned from this episode can help someone else too. The views expressed in this episode are those of the interviewer and interviewee and don't represent the views of their employer or even their significant other. Even though the magic of podcasting make it sound like I'm talking directly to you, this is not a doctor-patient relationship, and this is not medical advice or financial advice or really any advice. Thank us again for listening to The Physician's Guide to Doctoring.